Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen, as we talked about things going on off the football field. We know there's a lot of things going on the football field with the NFL, with their playoff push. We obviously have a game tonight, the Lions and the Packers, and as well as the regular season of college football wrapping up with this weekend with the Big Ten championship games. The championship games, Big Ten, ACC, SEC, those the championship games we have going on there. We'll get into the, the bowl matchups. We've got a few, that's popped in here. Signings, as far as players that are done, in regards to being able to, sign with agents, trainers, trying to get guys to come train with them. So, a lot of stuff, going on. We want to start the show today with kind of some news and notes. We were able to talk a little bit about the College Gridiron Showcase, that's going on in Dallas. So it's kind of a new concept that they're trying to do. They actually did a game, last year. I was somewhat involved. I actually ended up doing the color commentating for the game last minute. Marcus Colston, who was kind of, the owner of that game, had asked me to do it basically the day of the game. So it was a little bit interesting, but we made it through, to say the least. So, Neil, I know you've got a little, far as insight on, those guys, Jose Jefferson and Craig Evans, in regards to going back to Dallas to put together that showcase. Kind of, tell our listeners, I know it's something that you had talked about a little bit, on your Succeed in Football blog, as well as, in the Inside the League, rumblings, going on there. And I don't think the agent community, they've heard a little bit about it, but they don't totally know about it. So let's start off the show with kind of a little bit about that, give some more information as far as our listeners, especially our agent, listeners, to be able to give them, some more clear direction on what's going on there.
Well, the thing I think that's interesting, and I think we touched on this last week a bit, but I think what's interesting about the College Gridiron Showcase is they've essentially scrapped the traditional All-Star Game format, which is everyone comes in on Sunday or Monday. There are three practices and pads, then there's either one or two practices that are kind of walkthroughs, special teams kind of stuff, and then you have your game on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday. That's an expensive way of doing things, and Justin, you and I have both run games, and we know all the economics behind the game. Our listeners might not. I'm not going to bore them with a lot of details, but if you have a game, by the time you broadcast it and rent the stadium and all those kinds of things, you're adding $100,000, $200,000 perhaps to the package. And so they've pared it down and they've scrapped the game entirely, and now they're going to have just the workouts, which are really what appeals to the scouts and therefore appeals to the players and to the agents. So they've really made it something that's a little bit more geared towards people in the industry. And I think that's going to be an interesting concept, and it'll be interesting to see how well it's received by teams and by players who are invited, and I guess everyone involved with the process. The other thing that where they really try to save money is they're asking players to get there on their own. So the agents or the players themselves are having to pick up the flight or the drive or whatever that is. They're picking up from the airport, and they're essentially once you get to Dallas, you're taken care of. Hotel stay, food, et cetera, et cetera. But just the travel itself, which is another big component of the expenses, something they scrapped. So I like the idea, and I like the way that Jose and Craig are thinking, because they're trying to make this a bit more economical. And I think there's a bit of a paradox, because a lot of players probably think, hey, you guys aren't treating us right, you're not taking care of us. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't have the NFL's imprimatur, which the Senior Bowl has, or you don't have years and years of history plus a big backing charity behind you, which the Shrine Game has, you've got to come up with a way to pay the bills. And the NFLPA, obviously has a big war chest, and so they can spend a lot of money on their game and try to get it up and make it a big, respected game. And I think they've made a lot of progress in that endeavor. But for something like the College Gridiron Showcase, which is still, trying to gain traction and doesn't have instant name recognition and is trying to carve out a small part of the pre-draft run-up, they've got to be smart about things. And so I think they have. I think that they're going to have a good game. I think it's going to be very well received by NFL teams. And I think it's going to be a success. I hope it is. I really root for those guys. And I'm going to have a small role in helping advise the game, and you may as well, Justin. If they're smart, they'll bring you in too. Games like this are pretty close to my heart, and they're close to your heart too. And so I'm hoping that things go well for them.
What? So no guys. They're not paying for any players' travel. Is that the correct thing?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you know, if you break down the expenses of an All-Star game, about $50,000 is probably going to go to travel by the time you fly everybody in, all the coaches, all the important people, what have you. And then, you know, you're looking at anywhere from $25,000 to $75,000, sometimes for the stadium, depending on how big you want to go. Sometimes you can pare that price back a bit. You're looking at probably $200,000 if you want someone like ESPN to broadcast it. And those are pretty big pieces of the expense pie. So if you can kind of clear all those out of there, then it makes things a lot easier and a lot more streamlined for you financially. It certainly doesn't make it a cheap proposition. You still have the hotel and accommodations and what have you, and food and travel amongst the game and insurance and what, you know, those other costs. But those are the biggies. And so Craig and Jose have kind of done away with the biggies in hopes that they can give players one more platform for proving themselves. And I think one thing that's kind of interesting, I always get a lot of questions from agents. Hey, are scouts going to come? Well, for a long time, there's a game in Kingsville, Texas, called the Cactus Bowl, and it was strictly for Division II players. These are players that statistically make up only less than 15% of the NFL at any given time. Well, Kingsville is almost like a place where they don't want anyone to come in. I mean, you kind of fly into Corpus Christi or maybe to Dallas, and you got to drive a couple hours, and the roads are, you know, a little tricky, and the town is certainly not a bustling hubbub of entertainment and, you know, and leisure. But every NFL team came out there every year. I mean, it ran for quite a good while, and ultimately ran out of money. But the point is, if they were still having that game, despite the fact it's for small schools, despite the fact it's in a real hidden, out-of-the-way place, there'd still be 32 teams coming, because it's a great deal for teams. They get to come in and evaluate all these players in one place without having to go all over, you know, and watch more film and what have you. So I think there's an excellent chance that all 32 teams will be represented. Some teams may have more than one guy out there, just because, if nothing else, they get a chance to kind of eliminate some players from their board, maybe based on interviews, based on testing, based on something they didn't like when they were watching the players between practices even. I mean, there's a number of things they can gain from these games, and I think all the teams recognize that, and for that reason, they'll be there. So, you know, and if the NFL teams show up, then the players show up, and, you know, obviously the players do, and the agents do. So I think they're going to have the three legs of the stool, so to speak, at the game. They won't have the fans, but again, all they do is incur a lot of additional expenses to recover a tiny part of what they wind up spending usually, historically, when you have a game at the end of the week. So again, I think it's a smart idea. I think we'll, you know, obviously the jury's still out on whether it's really going to work, but I think there's a really good chance of it working.
Kind of another question here that I think probably our listeners would want to know: is there a cost for the players to go? I heard that there was some guys that there wasn't a cost, and some guys that there was a cost. Can you kind of clarify that point there for our listeners there, Neil?
Yeah, it's a good question. Another way they're going to try to recover costs is they're going to have three tiers of, groups. Let's say Group A is going to be your standard draft eligible players. They'll be there, you know, just like anyone else. It'll just be like any other All-Star game in that respect, except, as we discussed, they'll have to get themselves to the game. Once they're there, it's just like any other game. All the expenses are taken care of. You know, that'll be a good thing there. Group B is draft-eligible players who are paying a small fee to participate. I'm not sure what that number is. I think it's around $250. It could be higher, but I think it's under $300, and that's about half of what – most games are charging. But the benefit is that those draft eligible players are going to be coming in to an environment where NFL teams are already there. And with the other games, now there's the National and the FCS Bowl, which we played in Miami next week. And although that's a pay-to-play game, that's really gaining traction. And Michael Corte, who runs that game, does an outstanding job. Their charge is around $600, somewhere around that number. The charge for the College Gridiron Showcase for that Group B list is going to be less than half that. So, and there will be, again, I think there's going to be all 30, I expect there'll be all 32 teams there. So they're going to have a chance to go and spend a little bit less money and hopefully still be evaluated by all the teams. Then there's a third group, which is strictly street free agents. These players are no longer draft eligible. They'll only have one workout. They'll come in on Sunday and they'll register. They'll work out on Monday and then they'll be done. But NFL teams will be there again. Then they've got the schedule set up so that it's staggered, so that the different groups are working out at separate times, and they're encouraging the teams to stick around and check those players out. And I think that the teams will. I'm not sure exactly how they're, you know, what they're doing to maintain that. But if these guys that are on the street get a chance to work out in front of NFL teams in pads, that's something that they don't always get to do. You know, as you know, Justin, it's not easy to get one of those Tuesday workouts for a player during the season. And often, it works out, but it doesn't always. And, players are sitting there on his couch hoping for the best, hopefully working out, but not seeing any more football. And this is a chance for these guys that are street free agents to perhaps catch someone's eye and get another opportunity. The other thing that's a little unique about this game is, and I've never seen this before, they're going to ask the street free agents to run 40s and pads. Every player always says, maybe I didn't run a great 40, but I'm in pads, I'm something else. I'm a different player. I'm much faster, much more athletic. You know, I'm a football player. I'm not a track star. Well, here's a chance to show it for a lot of these players. And I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see how scouts evaluate a time in pads versus the time out, not in pads. And I can't even tell you if they're going to wear helmets right now, but I know they'll have shoulder pads on it. I presume they'll have, their full leg pads and that kind of thing, so they've kind of got the full complement of what they're going to wear on Sundays, although a lot of defensive backs and running backs don't even wear leg pads at all. So there's a lot of little different interesting twists and innovations that Craig and Jose are trying in an attempt to give players one more opportunity and hopefully not lose their shorts financially on doing something like this. So it'll be interesting to watch, and there'll be a lot going on. I think Jose and Craig also have an idea for a symposium. They want to invite parents to come in and learn about the process and perhaps people from surrounding sports management programs and colleges and that kind of thing. And I'm not sure how aggressively they'll have time to promote that. But one more opportunity for people who are interested in the game to learn about the game and to kind of know what's going on and just, I guess, have more interest in the process. So it's a grand dream, and they've got a lot of big plans, and I'm rooting for them, and I hope that a lot of players get a chance to renew their NFL dreams or get them started at least with this opportunity. Again, time will tell, but I think the fundamentals are there and the basic framework is there for it to be successful.
For sure, and that kind of is a nice segue to kind of what we want to talk about a little bit more in this show in regards to about the process and about the agent process, why you need an agent, and kind of some tips for parents. And I know that's a thing that you're able to do that during this regular college football season to try to help parents out. And it kind of all started, and I did a blog piece on this in regards to why players need agents. And it kind of started this summer when Russell Okung, the offensive tackle with the Seattle Seahawks, who was a first-round pick, a top-10 pick, decided he was going to go in free agency this year without an agent, and said he was going to, the article was betting on himself, that he wasn't going to use a registered, NFLPA certified contract advisor to help him navigate the process. Therefore, he was going to save that, that fee, the agent fee, which is 3%, which when you're talking, $10 million, that can be $300,000, there. In real money. Now, obviously, your agent fee is tax deductible, and when you get to some of those types of tax ranges, you're looking for a few different tax write-offs. But I'm no tax attorney, and so I won't go into the legalities of that. But I think the biggest thing when guys are looking for agents, it's about going and selling that film to all 32 teams. And Neil, you know as well as anybody, yeah, the top guys, you know, during this process, you know, do they need agents? You know, maybe yes, maybe no. Last year there was three players who didn't have agents. You know, Eric Flowers being the highest one there. But I think the standpoint of, you know, using an agent is to be able to help you and be able to protect your interests and be able to bounce things off of and be able to help know the landscape of, you know, the NFL and what the standpoint of, hey, you know, whether you're going to be a first-round pick or PFA, you got to be able to kind of have somebody there that's been through, you know, that hasn't been their first rodeo. And especially when you're, you know, trying to manage expectations and, you know, and help, you know, do that. And a lot of times the clubs don't want to talk to the teams that, you know, about that player without, you know, without that third party, you know, as far as, sure, you know, to be able to kind of mediate it there. And I think the number one thing that the players need to understand is they need to know, make sure that they're talking with a certified, you know, contract advisor by the NFLPA. There's a lot of runners out there. There's a lot of business managers that say, oh, you know, I'm an agent or whatever. But, and I think, you know, the NFLPA has tried to you know, get around the runner, you know, rule. But as you know, there's still a lot of those, you know, kind of runners out there. And, mm-hmm, you know, when you speak to parents, you know, in regards to the necessary evil or the you know, having an agent, and when all these guys, you know, these agents come, you know, after these athletes, and you get able to speak with the parents of this, what type of tips or what type of insight are you giving, you know, the parents on about this process?
Well, you know, the first issue is if the parents are even involved. Very often they're not, Justin, and I know that most of the reputable agents that I work with would prefer to go through the parents to kind of get things started. But sometimes the parents are completely checked out, or they're looking at this as kind of a wooing process and they want to be wined and dined and all those kinds of things. And there's so many facets to this business and things that you need to know that are so important that if you leave this to just essentially maybe a 6-month party as a parent and a chance to kind of brag to your buddies at work on how much your son is being recruited, then you're really missing out. I think there are also some dynamics at work now that you haven't seen in the last couple years, I guess. I always say this business turns over about every 3 years, and the latest trend, I guess, is that the NFLPA has, I don't know if I want to go as far as say declared war on agents, but they've really done a lot to, I guess I'd say, hinder their jobs perhaps, or at least maybe minimize them or make them look like they're less important. And that's a little disappointing. I think especially for players that fit into that 200 to 400 range, which is the late rounders, the guys who are making up the 6th and 7th round, and then the ones that are going to be priority free agents, or maybe the guys that are ultimately going to be tryout guys, they start to get on the net and start to read about how agents are unjustly treating players, or, you know, maybe they read Russell Okung's post on the Players Tribune, they may get the wrong idea about the process and may think, you know, hey, look, after all, this is me that was playing for 4 years and I can sell myself and I can hire an attorney to do a flat fee for me, or these contracts are pretty cut and dried. They're making a major mistake. Justin, I mean, you know, you're an agent. You know the value. I work with hundreds of agents and I know their value, and it's so important, this process, to kind of have a Sherpa, so to speak, someone to kind of guide you through it who's done this, who knows what he's doing, who, you know, not only does the contract but does so many other things, helps you find a good training situation and lets you know about the pro days and can maybe find a better pro day for you to showcase you a bit better, who can assist you in getting into an all-star game. There are so many things that a player needs an agent for, and you don't hear about them. All you hear about is the greedy agent who hits you for 3%, or in some cases, just 2%. You know, a lot of players are kind of trying to whittle that down too. So, I mean, this is kind of a soapbox issue for me. Again, people always tell me, you know, say, well, you're an agent, you say all this. I'm not an agent, I've never been an agent, but having closely studied the business and the business model for the last going on 2 decades, I see the value of a good contract advisor. And, you know, I mean, not to butter you up, Justin, I'd love to know what Trevor would have faced if he hadn't had you to kind of guide him through the process last year. I mean, here's a guy who probably wasn't going to be drafted, had a great spring, and in no small part due to your efforts, gets drafted late to a team that's got a quarterback who probably doesn't come back next year. And, so he's got a chance to, just by virtue of being in the right place at the right time, maybe he's the number two quarterback on a team next year as a guy who came in as a seventh rounder. So you can't overstate the value to me of an agent. Take away the negotiating of the contract, take away all the money of it. That is rather cut and dried, but there's so many things that a player needs from an agent that you don't get if you don't have them. And I think there's a perception out there that you can Google anything these days and get all the answers that you want for free. Not in this case. You can't find the cell number of the guy who's running an all-star game, and you can't know what to say to the pro liaison at a coach at a school when you're trying to get a kid into a better pro day, and you don't know what to say. An NFL team might not even have your contact information right if you haven't been in the right place at the right time. So many things you lose by not having representation, and everyone talks about the 3% that you pay. Well, you get to keep 97%. That's still a pretty good chunk of change if you make it. So I think a lot of this stuff is really overstated, and I think a lot of people are making mistakes that they aren't properly valuing the process and aren't putting proper weight on the value of the process and how important it is to have representation.
For sure, and I think, it is about – No, it is, this is the player or the parent's first rodeo, and that's what I like to say. Hey, this isn't my first rodeo. I've been here from, both sides of the stand, from representing guys to running all-star games to kind of knowing, the evaluation process. And the other thing I think you need to, talk to these guys about is Peyton Manning got cut. That's no doubt about it. Steve Smith got released. As far as, high-level guys who you thought, hey, were a lifer, and I'm not trying to ever say these guys aren't going to be Peyton Manning, but let's just say the guy who's the face of the NFL for many years got released, so you've got a shot to, get released and and then have to find another job. And that's where I think, the agents can come in there huge, is even on that second. It's not about the first, getting into the league. It's about, hey, once you get released and the bad times, that you need an agent. And that's where, I think a lot of these guys, they get suckered into the big name guys, these middle round guys, then, you always hear them, are calling, the smaller agents or the, medium sized agencies, after they've gotten released, and, the big time guys maybe aren't calling, calling back because they have other guys to deal with. And then they're trying to see, hey, how can I get back, in the league there? And so I think, when you talk to parents, you just got to, walk them through this. And it was, I do see a lot of, like you said, guys that get, dads that get kind of lost in the glitz and the glamour of being recruited, and being able to tell their guys that their buddies at work or whatever, host, so-and-so's agent just called me, about my son, and I think that's that's where those guys get, the parents get lost, on that. So, I mean, my thing is it's, you got to take, each situation, case by case. But I think the biggest thing when you're talking about with parents or with players themselves, you got to find a guy who, who's been done this, and not, is not new in there. And you also have to be realistic about yourself and where you fit in, the process, and who's going to be the best, ultimate fit for you, not about who's going to send you to the biggest training facility that has all the glitz and the glamour. And have great respect for the trainers and have great relationships with them. But when their job's done, when the player leaves them, they don't necessarily call, for the most part, don't call them to when they get released, or when something bad happens there. So you want to make sure that you've got to look at it from a lot of standpoints. And I'm sure it's difficult in regards to, players wise, is you're getting hit up with by a ton of people all in the standpoint there.
It's one of the greatest ironies of the business to me, Justin, is that so many times I think there's a perception that, it's kind of the Jerry Maguire perception that players are best buddies with their agents and they trust them, they respect them and all those kinds of things. And, in a in a great number of times, and maybe even the majority of the times, maybe even an overwhelming majority of times, there's almost an animosity and a contempt between the player and the agent, because the player doesn't really understand what the agent's doing for him, and there's a perception that, oh, I only hear from you around contract time, and I only hear from you when you want my money and that kind of thing. Whereas on the other hand, the trainer becomes like someone that is almost, especially when the player does well on draft day and has a good combine, has a good showing in his pro day, there's a perception that the trainer's like God. I mean, he's almost like a coach-player relationship, almost like a father or brother type relationship. And that's very important, and I don't mean to demean that whatsoever. It's valid. But they're only there really for you during that 6 to 8 weeks when you're training. Once that's over, you know, the agent's there through all that, plus everything else. And whenever something goes wrong, you know, you've got someone to call that can be an advocate for you and hopefully even work to get you back in the league. Whereas the trainer, his resources are pretty limited when it comes to those kind of things. So it's just one of the paradoxes of the game that you see that so often, and it's weird, but it's true. I don't know how, again, the only way that I can explain it is because it's kind of that relationship the player has with his coach. I mean, he's kind of going through the wars together, whereas they see the agent as more of a business kind of person, someone you somewhat keep at arm's length. I've never understood that, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, and I think that also does, you know, in regards to how the agent, interacts with, you know, their client, you know, and is able to, you know, some of those agents can't talk to football, you know, they've never evaluated, you know, guys, and
right.
and again, you know, and that's some, so they don't know, you know, how to talk to football, you know, acumen, you know, standpoint there. So I think that's mm-hmm. that could be another, you know, aspect there. So, you know, a ton of information, you know, in today's, show. I mean, we talked about the College Gridiron Showcase and kind of got a lot of, you know, insight on that. And I think that's huge. And I hope, you know, the listeners out there, you know, are taking notes and value, you know, that information that you were able to give with them. And then in regards to the agent, you know, process and why you need an agent and the Russell Kuhn stuff. You know, I know we're into the All-Star game, you know, standpoint here and you know, and then signings and different things like that. I know you're super, you know, busy with everything you got going on. What do we see here in the next, we got two days left of kind of the business week here, inside the league and succeed in football. What we got going on here, Neil, in the next kind of 48 hours?
The thing that I think what's going to be kind of interesting about succeed in football in the next days and maybe even kind of flooding into next week, we had a chance to talk to Karen. She worked in the NFL offices for a long time. She was in charge of the draft advisory board. She took in the applications from the players, and they worked through, you know, kind of the reviews of their cases for being drafted, and then would return a grade for those players that had submitted their names. And we're going to talk about that process and how that works, and you know, when you have to turn that in, and who you turn into, and when is too late, and when is better to turn in, how early can you turn in, all those kinds of things. And I think that's going to be kind of an interesting insight into the process. We'll talk about that in Succeed in Football. It's for inside the league, you know, this is kind of go time for me and for, you know, the people for what we do here. So we're tracking down all the signings and tracking down all the training locations and the All-Star berths, everything else associated with the game, and pass along all the buzz and the whispers, and trying to help out a little bit with the College Gridiron Showcase too when we can, and trying to help advise them and maybe point them in the right direction and do whatever else we, you know, we can do to help them make their case. And meanwhile, you know, staying in contact with the other games and everyone who's out there and trying to advise people. It's a busy time, but it's a fun time, you know, and this is kind of what we live for, and this is kind of what we do. And I know that it's the same for you, Justin. I mean, it's a real and it's an up and down process this time of year, because you're closing deals and finishing up and trying to determine if you're going to be able to sign kids. And, you know, you have the high highs when you sign them and the low lows when you don't. It's a really mercurial time. But, if, you know, again, it's for someone who really follows the inside of the game, and I think anyone who's listening to this program probably does, this is a real exciting part of the year.
For sure. So, Neil, another great show, another great insight there, and look forward to getting with you, you know, next week and see what else we can kind of unravel in regards to, you know, outside the line. Have a great week, Neil.
All right, thanks, Justin. I appreciate having you on. See you next week.